Well, getting a cancer diagnosis not only affects you physically, but mentally as well. And we're going to talk about what to expect and ways to cope. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for having joined us on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Cynthia Hayes. She's a former journalist, a hospital executive, and cancer survivor. She currently advocates for and mentors cancer patients through various initiatives. She has a book out. It's called The Big Ordeal: Understanding and Managing the Psychological Turmoil of Cancer. So we'll talk to her about the emotional responses to the disease and how to manage it. And certainly want to include you in the conversation. Are you a cancer survivor? How did you manage the psychological side of the disease? Maybe you had a loved one who had cancer. How were you able to manage that, working with someone who had a loved one who had cancer? What questions do you have about going through the process? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Cynthia Hayes, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Larry. It's such a pleasure to be here, and I'm delighted to be able to talk about my favorite subject.
Yeah, I tell you, but maybe start by telling us your cancer story.
Sure. I had gone in for a regular gynecologic exam, something that I sort of took a lackadaisical approach to when I was no longer worried about getting pregnant and having children. And I had no symptoms or any concerns going into that visit, but received a phone call a week afterwards. And, you know, automatically assumed it was the billing department or something like that. There was no reason for me to assume that my doctor would be calling me. But she, in fact, said, Cynthia, you flunked your pap smear and you need to come back in immediately for more testing. And, of course, I'd never heard of the idea that you could flunk your pap smear and went on to discover from there that, you know, a biopsy showed that I had uterine cancer, which is my particular type of uterine cancer was an aggressive, high-grade, fast-growing cancer. So they took a very aggressive approach to treatment. 10 days later, I had a radical hysterectomy, and 3 weeks after that, they started me on chemotherapy, which lasted for a total of 6 months. And I sort of went through the ringer because, as so many of us assume, I assumed I was going to die from cancer. But here I am, 5.5 years later, able to talk about it and even laugh about it.
Yeah. What about your experience made it clear to you that a book like yours was needed?
You know, I was surprised by the sense of isolation that I experienced with my cancer. Obviously, I was in, you know, shock and disbelief at the time of the diagnosis. But one pretty quickly has to switch into very high gear to make some decisions about care. And of course, you know, it's a incredibly stressful time. So I found that to be challenging. And then I found the isolation and the fear and the depression and the brain fog and all of these other emotions to be so surprising. And you see pictures of people coping with cancer and making it look like it's nothing. And of course, that was not at all what I felt. And so I felt this incredible disconnect between the reality of what I was experiencing and the vision of the cool, competent, positive cancer survivor. And it was only after I was struggling to regain a sense of energy and competence again that I started hearing from other people that they shared many of the same experiences, including that incredible sense of, I'm the only one who's ever felt this way. And that's when it occurred to me, you know, if we all feel this way, why don't we know that? Why don't we know that there is an anticipated psychological response to cancer. And why don't we begin to talk about that so that going into the experience, you can know, first of all, that you're not alone and that's not a sign of weakness. But second of all, how to actually anticipate and deal with some of these side effects of the disease and the treatment that nobody talks about.
Yeah. Well, I really have enjoyed going through your book. Maybe the the big ordeal, I guess the title may seem obvious in some ways, but it is a, why did you land on that title?
You know, it definitely seemed to me that it was a big ordeal, and probably would throw in a few expletives before ordeal. and it was surprising, I guess, because it was such a roller coaster ride. And the more I spoke with other cancer patients, and I ended up interviewing over 100 patients from all over the world, all different types of cancers, all different stages in their disease, from newly diagnosed to, 20 years ago. But everybody really did feel like it was an ordeal, and that the emotional side of it was every bit as challenging as the physical experience of cancer. And that's saying a lot, because the physical experience of cancer and cancer recovery is hard. There is nothing pleasant about chemotherapy. Nobody would ever choose to go through radiation treatment if they could avoid it. So those concepts of what the physical side of cancer is all about, I think we talk about, to a fair extent, but we really don't talk about the emotional turmoil that people go through, and that is actually a predictable part of the experience. And I think the combination of cancer still being somewhat stigmatized, and of course, mental health, and this is, of course, Mental Health Week, so I'm very glad we're talking about it this week. But mental health is a stigmatized, or lack of mental health is a stigmatized condition. And so we don't tend to talk about our emotions. And, if you broke your leg and were in pain, you would have no qualms about saying to the doctor, "I hurt." But when your emotions are broken, when your psychology is in pain, we often keep those feelings to ourselves, which allow them to then take on greater meaning than they really should. It was really my goal to help elevate the conversation around the emotional experience of being a cancer patient, and to the to some extent as well, the experience of the loving caregivers that surround those cancer patients, because 40% of us in our lifetimes will have cancer, which means all of us are affected by cancer. And so we need to be having these conversations to make cancer a little more manageable for us all.
I really like how you've organized your book, and you tip us off right away. You say in your foreword that the reader could read each chapter when it was relevant. Explain that.
Yeah, well, I think that cancer in general is a very scary thing, and of course, fear runs throughout the entire process, from diagnosis to finally finding emotional recovery at some point. And by reading too far ahead, we could actually scare ourselves into feeling much worse. But by reading sort of a chapter at a time, and it's diagnosis, decision time, starting treatment, ongoing treatment, sort of walks you through, and there are chapters dealing with progression and recurrence and end of life for those who face those devastating phases. But then there's also end of treatment and emotional recovery for those who are lucky enough to have that type of cancer experience. And by reading a chapter at a time, you gain some idea as to what to anticipate during that that phase of your cancer experience. And you learn from others who have been through that experience, how they coped with that particular phase of it, without getting yourself too overwhelmed by the entire process. And I think it's really important for people going into the cancer experience and living through it to understand that, you know, there's no one right way to cope. We're all so different in our psychological makeup, our personal histories, our skills, our likes and preferences. And therefore, we're all going to find different ways of coping. But sometimes when you're in the middle of it, it's impossible to imagine, how am I going to get beyond this? How am I going to cope with this particular thing? And just hearing from, you know, a dozen or so other people, this is what allowed me to get through this phase, can make a real, real big difference. It just gives you some ideas for what might work. And again, there's no guarantees. What works for one won't necessarily work for another. But having a bunch of arrows in our quiver makes a difference. And that's one of the reasons we tried to structure the book this way, to help people in each phase.
It's a great way to do it. The Big Dream is the title of the book, subtitle, Understanding and Managing the Psychological Turmoil of Cancer. Our guest, Cynthia Hayes, will be with us till 12:30 today, and you'll be able to join in. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back. Taking a look at the psychological side of cancer on the show today, Larry Mueller here, glad to have you with us today. Our guest is Cynthia Hayes, former journalist, hospital executive, and cancer survivor. She currently advocates for mentors cancer patients through various initiatives, and she has a new book out. It's called The Big Ordeal, Understanding and Managing the Psychological Turmoil of Cancer. As we talk with her, what questions do you have about going through the process? Maybe your experiences to share. We'd love to hear those as well. Join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Cynthia, we have some emails here, but I just wanted to first mention the patients in your book. You have lots of experiences from real patients in the book. I found it very helpful, I thought, and added to the interest of the book in many ways. But why was it so important in your mind to hear their stories?
Well, I think it's important because it helps patients understand that what they're feeling as they're reading the book is not because they are weak or because they are, somehow emotionally incompetent, but rather that it is common. It is typical to have emotional turmoil as part of your cancer experience. And I wanted to try to present the variety of emotional experiences that people have so that everyone can find a way of validating their own experience by seeing and understanding that, well, at least one other person felt that way too. And I think that that's important because we, you know, as I said, we don't talk about these things enough. And so by being able to read somebody else's story and see that somebody else felt this way, it can help you feel a little bit more comfortable with your own experiences.
Yeah, I think I would agree. And our bodies, I mean, our bodies really undergo some changes when we hear bad news like you have cancer. Maybe you could explain what happens to the body when we hear that.
Sure. And in fact, one of the most interesting discoveries for me and what really propelled this book forward was beginning to understand what was happening physically that was actually driving the emotions. And you know, conversations with neuroscientists and psychologists and oncologists to try and piece together all of these things. The first thing that happens, of course, when we hear the words "you've got cancer" is we have this incredible stress response, which you know many of us associate with a racing heart, but it also changes brain chemistry and the part of our brain that that is rational and allows us to think through things sort of shuts down, while the part of our brain that is worried about getting away from danger takes over. And this this stress reaction, also known as the fight or flight syndrome, it was really developed when we were, you know, running around the savannah worried about being chased by a lion. It's not a particularly helpful response when we're sitting across the desk from a doctor saying you've got cancer, because it makes it so hard to actually hear what the doctor is saying. And of course, you know, that shock and stress response is very hard to turn off at the moment, which is why so many of us, you know, walk out of the doctor's office in just totally stunned and haven't heard or retained any of the information that we may have otherwise learned through that meeting, and therefore call back the next day with so many questions. So I was surprised that was sort of a typical response. One of the other things that I found incredibly helpful to understand is that one of the things that cancer and many of its treatments actually causes is a degree of inflammation in our bodies that translates into inflammation in the brain. And that inflammation in the brain actually leads to a lot of the emotional and physical experiences that we have during cancer and treatment. There's a class of proteins in our bodies called cytokines. And you may have heard about them recently. They've been in the news related to COVID and the cytokine storm. But basically, they are proteins that our immune system uses to communicate. And there are pro-inflammatory cytokines and anti-inflammatory cytokines, and they're usually in balance. But if you get a paper cut, the pro-inflammatory cytokines are released, and they signal for platelets to go and quickly heal up that wound so you don't get an infection. They also signal white blood cells to go and fight off whatever bacteria might have gotten into that paper cut. And then as the paper cut heals, the anti-inflammatory cytokines take over and reduce the inflammation at the site and balance things out. Well, so if a paper cut releases pro-inflammatory cytokines, just imagine what, you know, massive surgery does. And it turns out that the presence of cancer increases inflammation. The dying off of cancer cells, thank you very much, to chemotherapy and radiation, causes inflammation. Chemotherapy itself causes inflammation. So there are all of these things causing inflammation in our bodies that then gets translated into our brain as, oh my God, I'm sick. I need to, you know, go back to bed and pull the covers up over my head. And that sickness behavior sort of creates the cycle of fatigue and depression and cognitive impairment and ultimately identity crisis and helplessness that we so often experience as cancer patients going through treatment. And of course, it takes a while for that body chemistry to right itself after treatment is over, which is why the end of treatment is not the day one feels normal again. The end of treatment is just the end of treatment, and we have a long ways to go before we get to physical recovery, much less emotional recovery.
And certainly you go through that in your book. I want to talk to Rachel in Wausau next. Rachel, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for talking to me.
Sure. What's on your mind?
So I just wanted to share kind of a unique perspective from my sister, who had cancer when we were kids. And she's fine now. She's been in remission for decades. But you know, looking back on the whole experience, she said, I felt bad for you. because I was the one in the hospital. I was the one everyone cared about. You know, I got all the flowers and the balloons and the cards and, you know, special things that she got to go do in Children's Miracle Network. And she said, I think that you were kind of forgotten about. And she said, you kind of had to go through that, too. You know, slept in the recliner in my hospital room and, you know, you had your birthday party canceled because I had a fever. And she said, I think in the future, people should really do more for the siblings and the families. And I just thought that that was a really selfless reflection on her part. And, you know, something interesting that even decades later, you know, I think probably some of the families and the kids don't get as much of the attention and the focus.
Rachel, thanks very much for calling. Cynthia, come in.
Yeah, I think that that's a really lovely story, Rachel. And I like to say that people don't get cancer, families do, because cancer affects everyone in the household. And you're right, as a sister to a you know, a young child going through cancer, of course you got, you know, your needs became secondary. And you know, even in my household, I have a loving husband. I have a daughter who was had just graduated from college and was home with me and you know, became my caregiver. And my son was on the opposite coast, unable to see what was going on with me, and therefore all the more worried. The entire household was affected by my diagnosis. And sometimes the rest of the household has to work that much harder to compensate for the sickness that the patient is experiencing. And so as the patient, you're focused just on your cancer, but everybody else is as worried about your health as you are, even if they're not fully understanding it because you're inevitably holding some secrets to yourself. But the rest of the household is also worried about, how do we keep the household going? How do we keep the income coming in so we can pay for the health insurance and the out-of-pocket costs that this cancer is going to mean for us? How do I live my life when, you know, mom might be dying or sister might be never recovering or spouse might be sick for years? So there are all of these other worries that go on in the household. And as cancer patients, we tend to be focused either primarily on ourselves or sometimes the cancer patient is more worried about the caregivers than him or herself, and is neglecting the patient's emotions while being concerned about the household's emotions. So it's a very complicated process. And of course, because we are not necessarily open with our own fears and concerns, we don't share those with members of the household, and people are not necessarily on the same page at the same time. Number of people who lost a spouse to cancer told me stories of, you know, getting to the same conclusion at different times in the process, that, you know, I'm going to lose my husband. I don't want to lose my husband. How do I keep him from understanding that I'm going to lose him? As opposed to being able to have those open conversations in which everyone recognizes the inevitable.
Yeah. Rachel, thank you again. Valerie emailed that she went through acute myeloid leukemia and stem cell transplant. The treatment saved her life, but left her psychologically traumatized and physically disabled. She still has PTSD every time she sees a doctor, currently 10 specialists. To cope, she began doing art and created a nonprofit to address the emotional healing from major illness through expressive art and therapeutic humor. She's doing this in Northern Illinois and Southern Wisconsin, and she even has a site. You could go to footsiestools.org. Footsiestools.org. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that site, but maybe comment on what Valerie had to say in her email.
Well, I'm glad that Valerie is finding some recovery. Unfortunately, about 10% of cancer patients experience PTSD for quite a while after their cancer experience. And In fact, scanxiety, or that fear that you're going to hear bad news again after a scan or a meeting with a doctor or a blood test or whatever, is a very common experience for cancer patients. And I think, you know, the problem is that for many cancers, we don't feel sick. And then we find out, oh, yeah, you're very sick. You've got cancer. And so our bodies have betrayed us in a strange sort of a way. And it's very hard to build back the trust in our bodies and to believe that things are going to be okay again. And that's why so many of us experience that scanxiety, and why for some people it develops into full-blown PTSD.
Yeah. Emmy mailed that she's a breast cancer survivor and endometrial cancer survivor. She writes she knows her own attitude was usually a positive one, although there were scary times and her mind went to dark places. But she wonders if you could comment on the emotional experience of family supporters. Her family was very supportive, but she wonders if she really grasped what they were going through. And we did talk about that just in a bit, but you want to comment some more on it, Cynthia?
Sure. Yeah, you know, I like to talk about sort of the intimacy of family relationships. And it's so easy for a gap to grow in that intimacy, because I, as a patient, am not necessarily going to share everything about my fears with those that I love, that those around me, because I don't want for them to be more fearful than they otherwise need to be, or for them to judge me because I am fearful and not able to put up that brave front. And so I hold back just a little bit. Well, that holding back just a little bit means that, you know, my loving family doesn't understand fully what I'm going through. And so they're not able to assess my reactions to things they may say in the light of what I'm actually experiencing. And so that widens the gap. And over time, there is this intimacy gap that prevents us from fully understanding one another. You know, my mother was 90 years old at the time of my diagnosis, and I did not want to share fully with her everything that I was experiencing, because I knew that she would be so worried for me. And so I made light of the experience with my mother. And it was only after she read my book that she said to me, "Cynthia, I think I should have been more supportive of you when you were going through cancer." And I sort of chuckled and said, "You know, but Mom, how could you have been any more supportive of me if I didn't tell you that I needed that support?" And so I think that every household, every family relationship, every loving, caretaking relationship goes through some adjustments during the process as we try to gauge how open can I be and how do I respond to what somebody else might not be saying to me about how they are experiencing this.
Yeah. A listener emailed to ask if a patient who has a recurrence of cancer, does that person more likely to suffer more mental health aspects? She had kidney cancer and it returned 10 years later. She's still suffering psychologically 11 years later and struggles every day.
Yeah, you know, I think it's not uncommon for people who have had multiple betrayals by their body to have a greater sense of fear and anxiety and a difficulty in sort of regaining a sense of normalcy and feeling that they can just relax and enjoy each day as it comes. And it does, you know, relate back to that sense of betrayal and that development of PTSD that is not uncommon for recurrent cancers. I think some people are able to make an emotional flip in their minds to viewing their cancers as a chronic disease, as one that will come back, but that will be treatable. And for people that are able to make that switch, it becomes a little bit easier to say, okay, I can deal with this because today is a good day. This month is a good month. But it's hard because so many of us like to live in the future. We like to plan things. We like to set expectations for ourselves. We like to imagine, what summer vacation might be like or whatever. And when your cancer keeps coming back, it makes it hard for you to allow yourself to plan. And so many people have found that by adopting, mindfulness practices or, living in the moment, that they're able to change a little bit of their psychology and find a little bit of comfort in enjoying today for what it is, as opposed to planning for the future. But, again, it's we're all different, and what works for one person might not work for another. But yeah. It's a challenge when the cancer keeps coming back.
Well, I think the challenge could be helped by folks who read your book here, The Big Dream, Cynthia. And I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I certainly learned a lot as I read through the book. And whether you have cancer or have a loved one with cancer, it's certainly worth a read. And Cynthia, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Larry, for talking about The Big Ordeal. It's hopefully a very helpful resource to anyone going through cancer.
Yeah. Cynthia Hayes, our guest today, and the title of the book, The Big Ordeal, the subtitle is Understanding and Managing the Psychological Turmoil of Cancer. And she takes us through kind of stage by stage, and so it really an interesting way to view it, and has, I think, something like 100 different people who had cancer, different forms of cancer, all over the world, and their experiences, and she weaves them into the book, along with some very good advice on understanding what you're going through, and then how to get through this process as well as you can. And we certainly didn't get to everything in her book. There's a lot there that we could have gotten into that, well, we sort of ran out of time. But again, the author, Cynthia Hayes, Hayes, and the title of her book is The Big Ordeal, Understanding and Managing the Psychological Turmoil of Cancer. Just remember The Big Ordeal and you're going to find it. Just a reminder, today at 1 o'clock, I hope you'll join us for the 17th Annual State of the Tribes Address. President John Johnson, Sr. of Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians will be delivering this year's address. That's at 1 o'clock this afternoon on the Ideas Network or online at WPR.org. So hope you'll tune in for that. And then I hope you'll tune in tomorrow. We'll talk about amphibians in Wisconsin to kick off the show. And then we'll also talk about school garden programs in the state. That's tomorrow starting at 11 on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.